Hey there, you're listening to Filmed in Canada.
It's a podcast about Canadian movies.
If you enjoy what you hear, go to the iTunes store and leave a review for us. It really helps us get noticed.
And if you'd like to continue the discussion, you can check out our Facebook page. Just search Filmed in Canada Podcast. And you can also reach us by email at filmedincanada@gmail.com.
And feel free to go to our website, filmedincanada.net, for our other content and to leave a comment.
All right, thanks for listening again, because sometimes you need a break from the funny podcasts. I'm William.
And I'm Chris.
I hope you've been having a great summer.
I have, yeah. It's been great. I've been having lots of local adventures. It's been fun.
And when this thing actually gets posted, you'll have just come back from your vacation.
That's right.
In sunny, wherever. Okay.
Places in BC. Are you enjoying summer?
Yeah, I'm enjoying summer. Not really, not being too ambitious about it, but it's been fun.
Yeah, thank you for bringing back cherries from the Okanagan. They were spectacular.
Oh, glad you could partake. All right, to today's movie, which is actually set in British Columbia. Today's movie is the documentary Highway of Tears, released in 2015, directed by Matthew Smiley and produced by Carly Pope.
And narrated by Nathan Fillion.
Yes. Yeah, all of those people have Canadian connections.
Yes.
So I happened upon this documentary. I'd heard about it before, but I just didn't get a chance to watch it until recently, because it was on Netflix Canada, and then it was expiring. So that's so finally got around to seeing it. But you've seen it before, is that right?
Yeah, I saw it. I can't remember if it was Christmas 2017 or Christmas 2016, whenever it was first released on Netflix.
Do you know if it premiered on Netflix?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Okay, because I was just looking at on IMDb, the company credits, and it said Netflix was the Canadian distributor. I don't know if that was like later on when they picked up or if they've always been attached. But anyway, that's
good question.
Just a curious,
I don't know.
Just a curious note. I was a little bit aware of the history behind the document, or the history behind the subject matter, and I guess I was hesitant to really delve into it. But now, having seen it, I think it's one of those movies that one of those documentaries on a subject that just seems very I don't want us to say important, but I mean, like it says relevant. I guess is one of it. It seems really relevant to Canadian culture, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So it's a documentary about Highway 16, is it? Did you write that down?
Yes, it is Highway 16.
Okay,
so it's the Prince George to Prince Rupert.
Yeah, so it's a over 700 kilometer stretch of highway, 450 miles for those on the other system, in the middle of British Columbia. That is, well, I mean, it's a long stretch, but between two major towns, what would you call them, cities?
I guess they are cities.
Okay, but it has a history of women going missing on this highway, usually because they're hitchhiking. At least that's like the last known record of a lot of these women. And the missing persons reports go from 1969 to like 2000 something teens, right?
Till
very recently.
That's right.
Yeah. So. Highway of Tears, as that stretch is nicknamed. So that's what it's about. It's about this stretch of the highway where it's notorious for possibly being a playground for serial killers.
Right. The suggestion isn't that it's like a Robert Picton where it's one person. It seems like it could be sort of killers of opportunity. Who see this very long, desolate stretch of highway. There's a lot of logging roads that aren't frequented by anyone that isn't a professional driver. So there's been suggestions that the people who abduct and murder these women could be people that drive professionally, like big vehicles as well, that would be privy to those old logging roads, as well as the Highway of Tears. So it's just the sort of arteries of roads that cover northern BC that are so unpopulated that It is dangerous to be a woman alone on those roads.
Mm-hmm. July of this year, there was a news release by Greyhound Canada. Mm-hmm. So they are discontinuing their service effective October 31st of 2018 in BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, save for the route between Vancouver and Seattle. So it's a huge loss of bus service in these areas in four provinces, which seems incredible. Nearly half the country, Greyhound Canada decided they're not going to serve, but it means that getting between Prince George and Prince Rupert is even more difficult for people, and that's one of the things that is really reinforced by the documentary, is that people hitchhike because they don't have a lot of choices to get where they want to go. So that news item, when I heard it, I immediately thought of this documentary.
Absolutely. Yeah. I did a little research after the Greyhound announcement, and I read an article that the CBC posted in June 2017, so just over a year ago. BC Transit launched a new service to cover the 400-kilometer section of Highway 16, and that goes between Prince George to Burns Lake and then Burns Lake to Smithers. And the trip only costs $5, and it's 72/3 of its operating costs are covered by the provincial government. So I don't know if it was the documentary, if it was the Missing and Murdered Women's Commission inquiry that has, you know, encouraged BC Transit to offer something. It's not that significant, but it's something that will get people around for appointments and to travel safely for a very small amount of money. $5 is pretty reasonable, but it's infrequent. So you'd really have to plan your whole life around, oh, is this the day that it goes from Burns Lake to Smithers?
Mm-hmm.
But it's one option.
Yeah. I wonder if when the Greyhound announcement was made, there's people who could probably understand it from a commercial standpoint. Like if Greyhound says that it's not viable to have these routes, that's what they have to do. I just wonder if it means the same thing to people if they don't think about the history of Highway 16, if they don't think about how people living in these communities that don't have a way of getting around are now put at more risk. I wonder if that registers for people who just hear the announcement. Also, Greyhound, in one of the articles I read, I think it was a Greyhound spokesperson who said one of the reasons that their passenger business has declined so much was in the aftermath of one of their passengers being beheaded on a route in Alberta. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I don't. That seems impossible to believe. If you've ever taken a Greyhound, nothing would be as horrifying as having someone beheaded on your trip, but it is not a luxury way to get around. People don't say, oh, I don't like to fly, I'm choosing to take a Greyhound from Vancouver to Halifax. It's often about money and just what you have access to. So I don't think people that ride Greyhound would make a decision, oh, I don't feel it's safe to ride Greyhound. You ride Greyhound because it is the only way to get to where you're going. It's not like there's another line. There's no PCL. There's no alternate line to get you out of your small town. My sister-in-law is from a reserve near Fort St. John, and her sister is coming to visit, and Greyhound has now canceled the PG route. So her sister will take a train from Prince George to Jasper, and then my sister-in-law will drive a four-hour round trip to pick her up in Jasper and take her to their community in northern Alberta. So now there's only one way. Her sister does not have a BC driver's license, so that is now really the only way, because there's actually not an airport in their small town either. So, Do you not feel, after watching this documentary, that there should be a compulsion for the Canadian government to subsidize? It doesn't have to be a for-profit thing, or could it be a crown corporation like BC Ferries? No one ever says BC Ferries has to make money in order to be viable. Isn't there a way that, you know, like Bombardier or something, that's, it's transportation that is subsidized by Canadian taxpayers so that it remains in business? Isn't there a way to make that happen to keep people safe?
What was your question?
My question is, you're just saying that it doesn't matter, that people of means don't matter, or Indigenous peoples that don't have another way to get around, to get to appointments, it just doesn't matter. If this isn't a call to arms to help people be safe mm-hmm. and go through the world in a safer way.
Well, that's what I mean is I think there's the one perspective, which is one of economics. And does it make sense to have that route? Does it make sense to have a fleet of buses serving that route? The other is, are there safe means for people to get around? I don't know if those two things, how they can be considered together, because they're separate things. If you have a commercial venture like Greyhound or another private carrier, mm-hmm. their concern is not, can I make a safe means of transportation for the community? Their concern is, can I have something that earns profit? And then if you're an entity that is motivated by how do we promote safety, I don't know if it automatically goes to let's make efficient and cheap bus service available. They're probably more looking at let's make sure there's policing available.
I think we've seen in this documentary that that the RCMP may not be the people that are the most helpful in this situation.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's what you would go to if
that would be that would safety. Be the entity that would be.
Yeah. There's not a ministry that is responsible for safe and efficient transportation for everyone.
Right.
Even though there's a Ministry of Transportation, which I don't know what they do, but I think it's making sure there's safe standards or whatever, right? But it just seems like it's two concerns that they should be together. They should be considered together, but they're not, right? And so, which is why I was saying, we have this, it registers that these two things are connected, that they're related because we saw the documentary. And then we heard the Greyhound announcement. But I wonder if in general, people put that together. But let's talk about the documentary then.
Sure.
Yeah. The telling of it is pretty straightforward. I don't think there's anything that stands out in terms of they've done something innovative, but I think it's really well put together and so that the filmmaking doesn't distract from the subject matter.
Right. I mean, it is a pretty standard format of mm-hmm. of talking heads, but the subject matter is so compelling and it is put together so well.
And it seems well researched. At least enough to tell this story without getting bogged down in specific stories, right?
Right.
And so Matthew Smiley, he wrote and directed this documentary. He was born in Montreal in 1981. He's got a background as an actor, as a producer, also making music videos. So for his first feature-length documentary effort, I think it's quite well done.
Oh, agreed. Yeah. Agreed.
If it was done in a longer format, I could see that it would work as one of those Netflix multi-part true crime dramas. True crime.
Right,
shows,
like a docuseries.
Yeah, there's enough meat in here mm-hmm. that it could feed a few episodes.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about the Highway of Tears missing and murdered Indigenous women, or mostly Indigenous women. The EPANA division of the RCMP is currently investigating 18. But the number could be as high as 40. So there is a lot of investigations that could be, a lot of arms of the investigation that could be explored through, mm-hmm. A six-part series. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of interviews with family members of the victims and some community members who advocate for better means of transportation and that sort of thing. And he also talks to different law enforcement people and investigators. And that's where we hear theories about could it be this known serial killer, or could it be somebody in the trucking industry, or mm-hmm. so there's just a lot of ways to explore the theories as well. So yeah, it really does have enough to be more than this hour and a half documentary.
Well, I feel one of the interviewees is Rena Satorsky, and she spearheaded the Highway of Tears Symposium starting in 2006. And I wonder if any of these investigations would be happening unless someone said, someone's finally got to care. Can someone just care enough to investigate these missing and murdered cases? So I think unless it was grassroots from the community, from the Prince George Native Friendship Center, from the Highway of Tears Symposium, I feel like if the grassroots people didn't spearhead it, then I think it would still be an unknown thing that every 2 years there might be something in the Vancouver Sun about another murdered woman found on the Highway of Tears. So it's just really impressive that that community came together to make us listen.
There's also victims who are not Indigenous women. Mm-hmm. And the documentary makes the point that when white girls were, when they went missing or were found murdered, that law enforcement took more of an active role, so that they actually seemed to care about the investigation.
The father of the Caucasian tree planter, Jack Hoare, says how differently they were treated than the Indigenous families. The RCMP were incredibly helpful and concerned. So some of the interviewees in the documentary said this is just an example of the systemic racism against Indigenous peoples in Canada. Mm-hmm. Jack Hoare did not get the same treatment as the families of the other missing and murdered women.
Mm-hmm. To go back a little bit, the documentary opens with a bit of history, setting up like the highway route and talking about the communities that live along the route. And it touches on the residential school system that the Indigenous people were forced onto by the Canadian government. And of course, having recently watched Indian Horse, which brought that history really to the fore, because in its dramatic presentation, it just felt, when the documentary hit on that point, for me, it really registered a lot more than it would have, I think, in the past, because I'm more aware of what that means to say that a community was broken because of the residential school system, and that as a background to the whole thing, to the whole situation of like why these people are at risk. It really feels like we can't look away from that history anymore. Like the whole reconciliation movement that we've been exposed to in Vancouver, mm-hmm. It really seems like it's not really addressing, it's not commemorating a thing of the past. It's addressing a thing that is still current. It's like it's wounds that haven't healed. So that's just another level of texture to this documentary too, you know, that is included.
Yeah, William and I, you mentioned it in the Indian Horse podcast, but that we were lucky enough to attend an experiential workshop by Brad Marsden called Fire Across the Land, which was helping educate service providers, like people that work for the city of Vancouver, of the collective trauma that has happened due to residential schools and colonialism. And it was a pretty profound workshop that I believe every Canadian could benefit from. It's generational trauma that will take more generations to heal. I mean, the Truth and Reconciliation Committee is, we're all working towards healing, but it's a pretty deep wound that has these aftershocks that I think we'll continue to feel for a couple more generations for sure.
And I think for you and I, who are not of Indigenous blood or connection, is that entirely true for you?
Well, my sister-in-law is from the Carrier Nation.
Do you feel like when you like sum up your identity, is that part of it?
It's pretty close, because a lot of the things that part of my family deal with is fallout from life on the reserve, residential schools.
Okay, all right. What I meant to say was, for someone like me who is, who doesn't have like a direct connection with the Indigenous population, things like that, like the Fire Across the Land workshop and like kind of learning the history of the residential schools, that really does open my eyes to what kind of racism is experienced by Indigenous people. And sometimes it's not overt, but it's still there. And I think that's watching Highway of Tears, I think it's something that helps me understand what the what an underlying issue is, that there is a lot of cultural insensitivity that goes into why the situation is ignored.
Well, I can't remember his name, but I think his mom was the executive director of the Aboriginal Friendship Center in PG, and I think he was the one who facilitated the Moose Hide campaign, which is about beginning the healing. And this is a quote from the movie. "My dad learned in residential school to resolve conflict with violence and parent with violence. And now is the chance to reclaim our real manhood, to spread that good medicine through our words." So his father modeled the way through violence because that's what he experienced in the residential schools. And it's this generational fallout from not having someone model the way. And I think he facilitates this Moose Hide campaign in order to help men heal in a very specific way from this modeling of violence in their family structure. Another aspect, I think, of the institutional and systemic racism that the families experience is that the implication is your daughters are engaged in high-risk behavior. So whether that is hitchhiking or going out partying and hitchhiking, they're essentially saying that the 1 to 4,000 missing and murdered Indigenous women across the country are almost asking for it. It's it's akin to sexual assault, that women don't really have. It's like somehow we're not the victim, but we've asked to have this visited upon us. And for International Women's Day, I saw a movie called River of Silence, which was made by a female Cree filmmaker, or written by a female Cree filmmaker whose grandmother was murdered, but they're just considering her missing. And she also was hitchhiking between two small towns in Alberta. And she said, "My grandmother wasn't doing anything high risk. She was going to visit her grandchildren. But that missing person is unimportant to the RCMP and unimportant to majority culture institutions. She was asking for it by not having a car."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was, I remember there was one, he was an Indigenous male who was talking about his mother who got murdered. And that one was, all of the interviews with the family members are pretty heartbreaking. But that he described how his mother was trying to provide for them, and like she had some luck at the bingo hall or something, and it's likely that's why she got murdered, is because someone saw that she had money that night. And I think like the filmmakers, it shows that they have the trust of their interview subjects, because they're really they really speak openly about the experience. And then there's that one woman who seems like she's a bit wiry, and she did you write
she
down her name?
She is what I think they call a character in small towns. She is a real character.
But I didn't get her name.
I didn't see her name.
Oh, okay.
I guess I could have checked the credits, but I didn't see her name underneath when she was speaking. Right. But
she had some good stories to tell. And
she did.
Yeah, and the way she tells them is somewhat entertaining, but there's also there's some darkness behind it too. Like
she talks about the Judge Ramsey, who had been sexually exploiting girls, mm-hmm. And got 7 years. And it's just another example of why would anyone in these small communities trust the law, mm-hmm. trust the RCMP, trust the law, trust the courts. I feel like you're never going to get a fair shake. The system is corrupt at its core, mm-hmm. dealing with you because of systemic and institutional racism.
Yeah. And that, I think, is a shock. It can be a shock to the mainstream, to viewers in the mainstream culture, because We don't hear a lot of stories about corruption in Canadian law enforcement.
Right.
Yeah, we do hear it. I mean, it's mm-hmm. not that it's non-existent, but often we hear about it when you hear about like large American metropolitan areas like New York and Boston, right? And then you hear stories about corruption there, and you're like, oh yeah, of course. Right. But you know, until recently, I think we were just socialized to believe in the RCMP as mm-hmm. as like a force of good,
right?
That they would treat everyone equally, that they would get their man, and so one of the illuminating things about the documentary is you hear from so many people who just say the RCMP are not there for them, so again, it just the film goes a long way to give you an insight into what it's like to be on that side of receiving not overt, but it's racism.
Yeah, one of the interviewees says, if a young woman is feeling victimized, who would she turn to? And then she goes on to say that 90% of sexual assaults are not reported. Why would anyone feel like that was a safe... When people have been missing since 1969 and no one has helped your family or your aunt or your loved ones get any sort of closure or... you know, find the perpetrator, why would you feel like that was a safe place to go if you felt like you were in danger, if you were being victimized by, whether it's domestic abuse, sexual assault? I don't think a young woman would ever go to the RCMP in those communities and feel like that was a safe place to go. And of course, I'm not painting all RCMP officers with the same brush. I'm saying that there is, again, just some deep systemic racism that's happening and neglect mm-hmm. when it comes to serving Indigenous communities.
I hope we're not just setting this up as like a subject matter and history that's really unpleasant. I mean, it is unpleasant, but I want to talk about it in terms of the movie that we just saw. And Highway of Tears is not available on Netflix Canada at the moment. Maybe it'll be back. But how did you see it?
I saw it on Netflix the first time, and the second time I just went to the website and I rented it for $3.99. So I had 48 hours in which to watch it.
Okay.
So I recommend that to the sevens of listeners that may be out there. Please spend your $4 and rent this film. You can't get it at the Vancouver Public Library either, unfortunately. So. Put in a suggested purchase.
We should. We should, mm-hmm. Our local libraries, we should put it in their suggestion box to yeah. acquire it.
Yeah. Agreed.
Is it just highwayoftears.com or something?
That's
or
right.
That? Okay. So yeah. that's a way to get access to this movie. I think it's also just like compelling viewing because, like so many of the true crime types of series that are available, it's well made and it sustains your interest, and because it just feels so of the moment. It's not a historic thing,
right?
It has that going for it as well. Like it just you know, even though it's not really clear if like the ongoing investigations if they're leading to new charges or if they're just uncovering you know, how to pin it on somebody who's already gone to prison, right. Just like that unknown mystery of like, well, you know, what does it mean that all these files are open? I think it makes it feel like very relevant.
I agree. And I think one has to think about what it means to lose people in your community. If you're from a community of 475 people, you know, whether you're Dog Creek, Canoe Creek, you know, some small community in BC, and someone's lost an aunt, someone else has lost a grandmother, someone has lost a sister. I feel like how could any of those communities be untouched by the Highway of Tears, missing and murdered Indigenous women? So that means all those communities are affected by this. I feel like you couldn't live in one of those small towns without having it affect you. There's no way you could just blindly go through life and be untouched by the Highway of Tears, missing and murdered Indigenous women.
So you did some further research as a result of watching this,
yeah,
Chris?
I did. So just by the numbers here in Canada, although Indigenous women and girls make up only 4% of the female population in Canada, they represent 16% of all female homicides between 1980 and 2012. And this is shocking from Saskatchewan. According to a 2007 study by the province of Saskatchewan, the only province to have systematically reviewed its missing person files for cases involving Indigenous women, Indigenous women were found to have made up 6% of the province's population and 60% of the province's missing women cases. I mean, it's just, again, just heartbreaking that the numbers that I read doing further research is between 1,000 and 4,000 missing and murdered Indigenous women across the country. So this isn't something that just happens on the Highway of Tears. It happens in rural Saskatchewan. It happens in Northern Ontario. It happens in Manitoba. Mm-hmm. It's, again, part of the whole systemic, colonial, institutional, generational racism. That's an awful lot of mothers and aunts and sisters and daughters and grandmas that that aren't in Canada anymore.
Well, that is tragic.
They, at the end of the documentary, you do see that they have posted billboards that discourage girls from hitchhiking. But again, unless you've got rural Uber, how is someone supposed to get around? I know that when you take the main island ferry from the mainland, they have something called a car share. So if you are on the ferry, you can go to the car deck, and if someone has a sticker on their vehicle that says, I'm interested in a car share, you can get a ride with them to wherever you're going on the island. And then there's free car stops peppered throughout main island that if you are just, or just want to run into town to grab something, you can just wait at the car stop and a local will come pick you up and drive you someplace. And I don't know how you would do that in a safe way with a bunch of strangers on a 700-kilometer stretch of mostly desolate highway. But is there something, you know, a billboard telling you not to hitchhike still doesn't allow you to get to your appointment in Prince George? Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to keep, how those communities would keep the girls safe without other options.
Yeah, the whole issue goes much bigger than just the scope of this documentary. But let's then wrap up our talk on Highway of Tears before we bring the whole party down. Yeah. We're going to rank it against something similar. Do you have anything in mind?
You know I have a hard time with this rating system.
Well, you shouldn't. It's pretty simple.
I don't know. It's pretty easy. To most. I have a hard time with it. Okay. I guess River of Silence, but that's a feature film about the same subject matter that takes place in BC, but you haven't seen it.
What about?
I haven't seen Indian Horse yet.
Okay. What about Zodiac?
Oh. Okay, now explain how it works again. So you go first. If Zodiac is, you said zero? Is that how it works?
Zero. Whatever I feel about Zodiac is just zero.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I'm just placing this movie in relation to my feeling about Zodiac.
Okay.
So, and your feeling of Zodiac is different, and you're going to place this. Would you like, do you like this more or less than Zodiac? It's essentially how it works.
Yeah. But of course, that's apples and oranges.
It totally is, yeah.
I don't think everyone should see Zodiac.
No?
But I feel like everyone should see this documentary.
Then you would rank it appropriately.
And that number would be 10? I don't know. I don't know how it works.
It works how you want it to work.
I don't know. Can I just say that I highly recommend this documentary and I feel everyone should watch it?
You can say that, but not just that. You can say that. You've already said that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you want a number?
Well, that's how it works. Metrics. We apply metrics. Yeah. So is it okay? Because we've both seen Zodiac, the David Fincher movie about the Zodiac killer, right? Of course. That's right. What was his name? So the connection is like dramas about serial killers, right? So one is a fiction of a historical incident and one is a documentary. But I would put Highway of Tears as a Zodiac minus one. Like, they're pretty close for me, like, in terms of, you know, I think what I might get out of it on a second viewing, or what I recommend to your viewers.
Yeah, to me, the difference is one builds a lot of tension, and the other one just hollows your guts out because it's just heartbreaking.
And so how would you rank Highway of Tears against Zodiac?
So plus five if Zodiac is zero.
That's how it works.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for joining me to talk about Highway of Tears, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for listening, and we'll get you some more sound waves about Canadian movies next time. Sorry, it was such a downer, listeners, really, but yeah, it's worth watching.
I'm sorry if I was a bit choppy. I'm
no, me too. I don't know.
Not feeling super fresh, so I apologize.
Yeah, it's kind of a hard one to get into.
Well, it's because, you know, if there's a narrative...